I welcome Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow of the Hoover Institution. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. Energy, oil, the price of gasoline. Within these last days, I read from a report at oilprice.com. President Joe Biden asks the Federal Trade Commission to investigate the possibility of oil companies' involvements in price trends in retail fuels, alleging illegal conduct on the part of the companies. The quote, there is allegedly, quote, mounting evidence of anti-consumer behavior of oil and gas companies, according to a letter sent by the White House to FTC Chairwoman Lina Khan, despite the fact that blended gasoline prices were down more than 5% over the last month. The letter said, finished gasoline prices were 3% higher over the period. Professor, a very good day to you. Thank you. There's much to discuss about energy worldwide, but let us focus on the idea that the FTC has been charged with looking into illegal conduct. What does that mean, Richard? What are they looking for? And we're talking about not only oil companies, but whole oil states as well. What would they find? Good evening to you.
Yes. Well, look, there is a standard theory of economics which says that when you have a group of producers who can interact with one another, what they will agree simultaneously is to find some way in which they can reduce their output in order to raise their prices. OPEC is the example of one of these cartels. But interestingly enough, OPEC does not try to do this by setting price caps. The reason they cannot do it is that the oil that are made by these various producing companies is of different grade and quality, and so that it turns out that if you set the same price for all the oils, the Brent crude, which is very clean, will essentially clean up the market, and other kinds of crude, which is dirty, will disappear. So what they do is they result in a system where they give quota allocations. You get to produce so much, we get to produce so much, and so that what happens is the expensive players can still remain in the market, even if they make a smaller profit than anybody else. That can't be the situation here, because he's talking about price. And he's also talking about, essentially, at this particular point, a standardized commodity, 93-octane fuel, which meets all of government standards. So you now do have a commodity, a pure commodity. And so the question is, you can use price controls as a way of trying to reduce output and raise prices. The question is, have you done this and how? Now, the first thing to notice about what President Biden said is he made no particular allegation of where companies met with one another in order to set these particular prices. This is not a case in which there's any kind of an explicit agreement. He also made no particular references to which particular companies were involved in this attitude. And if you actually look at the total production in the world, three of the largest oil producers are nationwide companies, two in China and one in Saudi Arabia. Are they part of this particular situation, or is it only the American companies like Chevron and ExxonMobil that are part of it? We don't know the answer to that question either. And it turns out that if you don't have these other nations as part of this giant cartel, the other companies have too small a market share, then it makes no sense for them to reduce their output if, in fact, the larger players can cover that and make an advantage themselves. But he doesn't deal with these things. So what he does is he comes up with a series of stuff based upon what he thinks to be price movements relative to cost movement. And this is, again, truly bizarre. If you looked at the price movements, you see they kind of go up and down, fairly volatile market responding to all sorts of things, the change in travel behavior because of the COVID violation. You lift the restrictions, you put them back in place. It turns out there's a shortage of new cars, and this may influence the amount of models that are being driven. Oil and gas is used in 1,000 other industries, and we don't know exactly what the demand conditions are there. But he's saying prices are going up at a time when the cost at the pump is going down, and he treats this as a sign of a cartel. But the other thing, of course, is you have to exclude innocent explanations for this to go. And one of them is, with the recent surge in traffic and travel and traffic, the demand has gone up. So if you have the whole demand curve shifting out upward into the right, and then you have the cost going down a little bit, you can still get higher prices, even though there's a perfect operation of a competitive market. So he hasn't even tried to exclude that. Well, then he gives this to Ms. Khan, and this woman has horrific judgment on just about everything that she talks about. She should not be the commissioner of the FTC or indeed of anything else. And her attitude is, well, there's always corporate abuse. And so what she does is she starts from a very different assumption than the president seemed to indicate, which is these guys are big, therefore they're bad, and maybe they're not doing this, but they're doing something else. So if we could find this is a way to get them, it's fine. And this is sometimes called the neo-Brandeisian approach. After Louis Brandeis, who had some really terrific antitrust opinion, but also wrote some really dumb things about the subject, somehow or other confusing size on the one hand with market share on the other. And cartels can only exist when you have three or four players, all with large shares, who can find some effective way to communicate with one another. My friend Louis Caplow wrote a book about competition and price fixing, in which he tried to indicate that at least in certain kinds of markets, you can signal with price variations that you're prepared to go up or down, and that that would be a way to have a cartel without having any private communications. I'm a little bit skeptical as to how that could work. But if it can work, it could only work in very limited markets. And what you're talking about here is a global conspiracy where you don't even know the number of players. It's impossible to know where you're going to signal your prices, since there's so many other things going on. So the whole thing looks like a complete house of cards. And what it is, it's a part of the president trying to vindicate the progressive program, that big business is inherently evil. And there are certainly cases where big businesses, particularly in collusion with government, do all sorts of things which I heartily disapprove of. But this one doesn't look to be that kind of
thing. We have news from the FTC to speak to this point. This within these last days. Two Republican appointees to the Federal Trade Commission asked the White House to disclose any, quote, mounting evidence, end quote, of potentially illegal contact. FTC Commissioners Noah Phillips and Christine Wilson asked the White House to share the evidence so that we might consider how to proceed, goes the quote. This speaks to the fact that this appears to be a partisan issue right now. Is that correct, Professor? Lena Khan being an
appointee. Oh, yes. I mean, it's certainly the Republicans will not go along with this. But the way these commissions are organized, the president gets to appoint the chairman, and that chairman gets two others with them. So you can do everything by a 3-2 vote. And this means, in effect, that these commissions are not independent expert commissions. The fact that you appoint them along political lines means that they're very likely to act along political lines. There was a time when Democrats and Republicans on antitrust issues and so forth were pretty closely aligned with one another, so that the 3-2 split did not make enough. So, for example, when Christine Varney was the head of this office under the Obama administration, I thought she made one or two mistakes, but basically was a highly sensible person and would never indulge in this kind of activities. But Lena Khan, fresh from the Yale Law School, is a different kettle of fish. She's backed by Tim Wu, who's a brilliant writer and a terrible thinker, as far as I'm concerned. The Cantor's running that department. At this particular point in time, they are all neo-Brandeisian, so you don't have anything like the consensus you had on energy 10 or 11 years ago.
Let's go.
Antitrust was not an issue during the Obama administration.
In your presentation to the Hoover Institution's Defining Ideas, you cite Petroleum Products Antitrust Litigation of 1990. Ninth Circuit Judge Dorothy Nelson did permit a price-fixing case to go forward. What was then that is not now, Professor?
Yeah, well, this is a very interesting case. And the case that Dorothy wrote, I mean, she was my dean when I was at USC, is generally regarded as probably the most thoughtful exposition of how it is that you try to prove a case of price-fixing with parallel pricing. And so what happened is you had gas prices that were being distributed in four western states, and they seemed to move mysteriously up and down.
Arizona, California, Oregon, and
California, Washington. Yeah, and Oregon, yeah. And so, you know, so she said, well, you know, the district court judge said, well, you've got to have more than just simple parallel movements. And what she did is she reviewed the literature and indicated that within this kind of a limited area, it may well just be that you could prove that these price movements are enough to establish that there has been a contraction. Look, I've been involved in similar cases like that, and in some cases the evidence is overwhelmingly powerful. I did not mention the potash case, which I had the distinction of losing as a lawyer for the plaintiffs, which was, I think, a case which was one of the strongest antitrust cases I've ever seen, beaten back by what I still regard as the worst horizontal pricing case in the history of the United States. That's the loser. I still have sour grapes, even though it's 18 years ago. And what you could do is there were two companies, right? Calium and the Saskatchewan company. And the vice president of one becomes the president of the other. And then what you do is you start to look at the way in which the price moves relative to the cost of production. And it turns out that the two lines, when they're in competition, basically indicate the same that you would expect in competition. As the costs go down, the prices go down, and the profits remain roughly constant. And then the moment this shift starts to take place, the lines completely deserve. The prices go wild high, and it turns out that the production costs remain the same. So generally speaking, what happens is whenever you have a change in prices, if it turns out that it's a weak market and a competitive market, the least efficient mines will close down, maybe not permanently, but at least temporarily, so that it's only the low-cost stuff that gets out there. But if it turns out that when you sort of have a situation where mines are closing at the same time that prices are rising, that indicates you're restricting output in order to get cartel gains. And we could not persuade Judge Beam that this was in fact the case. I mean, it was so frustrating, I can't begin to describe it. So that's a case where there's really strong econometric evidence that does it. You've got a standardized commodity. You've got two major players that are doing this. They're both located in Canada. They're selling in the United States. Everything works. My guess is, although I never was able to follow it up, is what Dorothy says, you got enough here to go to the jury. I don't believe that you can win that.
Judge Nelson. Judge Nelson said you can go to
the jury. Judge Dorothy Nelson, yes. I mean, I don't believe that that the jury would do this, but that's a situation with standardized commodity, four states, very clear time periods and so forth. Right. And this thing sprawls over the entire globe.
And so the president,
you're starting to try to deal with not the price of fixed gasoline, but the relationship between unrefined gasoline, refined gasoline. You have to do additives. There are different state regulations. The whole thing is a complete mess.
Also,
what this is just a canard.
Also, you're putting Chevron in the same suspect pool of PetroChina, Sinopec, and Saudi Aramco. And as you say in your essay, good luck getting those particular enterprises to respond to your search for illegality. Professor, there are other explanations for why the price of gasoline is higher now than it was a year or 2 years ago. And when we come back, let's look at the Biden administration and its energy policy leading to this present discomfort. This is CBS Eye on the World, Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing for Defining Ideas about the president's intention to investigate big oil for price fixing. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.